Namaste and welcome to the Om Sam Yoga and Ayurveda podcast.
A space to dive into how we as humans can live more intentional, ethical, and sustainable lives.
And how we can come into harmony with ourselves, others, and nature in the process.
We share tips to help you cultivate a healthy body, calm mind, and strong purpose through the traditional Vedic wisdom of yoga and Ayurveda.
My name is Aaron Petty. I'm a yoga teacher, a teacher trainer, a yoga therapist, but above all, a student of this great tradition.
My name is Paige Taylor. I'm a yoga teacher, Ayurvedic health consultant, advocate for sustainable living, and lover of all beings.
And on today's episode, we are back drinking Paige's brand new tea, which you can officially buy from our website right now. And that's all I'm going to say about that, because actually, today's podcast is about injuries. And if you've listened to any of our podcasts in the early days, you will know that I'm quite fond of injuries. If you know me from my personal life, you'll know that I'm quite fond of injuries and that I have a long history with said topic. So I'm excited to get into this one. Paige, on the other hand, has just about zero experience with injuries.
Mild injuries for sure, but nothing like, I've never broken a bone and never had a surgery and never been under. So my experience is limited, and it, definitely from that place of like lack of experiential knowledge, I have like a little fear about it.
Yeah, and I think that it's really common for yoga teachers, especially who do a 200-hour program and then step into teaching, to have that same, to share that same fear around injury. Like, oh, I don't know what it means to be injured. I don't know what it looks like to be injured. I don't know if something needs to change in yoga practice. And if that's you, don't worry, because we're going to answer all of those questions. And yeah, I think that the yoga teacher training programs very often don't cover, like they might cover a couple of common injuries that can happen in yoga and how to avoid them with alignment. They might cover a couple of other common injuries that they see often, and you know, that's kind of what we do in our trainings. It's not something that we cover in depth because there's so many other things to cover. And so how do we as teachers and as students keep ourselves and others safe in yoga practice? And if we do come across an injury, or if we do injure ourselves, how do we make sure that we can continue with our yoga practice in a way that's not going to exacerbate the symptoms that we're having?
And I think it's so interesting because one of my Ayurvedic teachers was speaking about something, and she was sharing how like she had this consultation with a client and was giving them all this, you know, recommendations, and let's try this and then let's try that. And the client, I think, was maybe not so open to the holistic health approach, and just was like, you know, you don't even know anything. All you're saying is like, let's try this and let's try that. It's like an experiment. And my teacher was just like, and what do you think the Western medicine world is doing to you? And I just think that's such an important thing to understand, is that sure, there's people out there with much bigger degrees and much bigger, you know, study in the physical well-being world than yoga teachers. But with that being said, you know, there's not that much depth, and the idea is that, you know, we all just have our own experience. And so even if you get labeled as, you know, somebody that has a specific injury, it doesn't mean you're going to experience it the same way as the person next to you or the person next to you. And I think that's such an important concept to understand when we start to speak about injuries, is that, you know, as a yoga teacher, we don't know. Like, we don't know all what's going to be perfect for you. We don't have all the answers. We don't know how we're going to fix, you know, whatever's going on. But what we can do is give it a red hot crack, and we can have our informed knowledge based on all of our study, all of our experience with a different range of students and with our own body, and provide support when needed.
And I think just before we get any further into this episode, I would just like to put out a little disclaimer that this is not intended to be medical advice. And if you are experiencing some kind of injury, that you should seek out professional medical help.
Totally.
Or if you're looking for your perspective, maybe you find a registered yoga therapist in your area. That could be a good idea as well.
For sure.
Okay, so let's start by understanding what is injury.
Mm.
Injury could be described as any damage or harm caused to the physical body, caused by physical trauma such as an accident, a fall, a laceration, anything like that. It could be also caused by overuse mm-hmm. of a specific joint through repetitive motions. And these injuries, whether they're trauma-based or overuse-based, could be ranging from something that's very minor that could be a week or two of healing to something that's very major that could be a couple of months or a couple of years of recovery. And when I'm talking about like minor injury, I'm talking about like a rolled ankle or a bruise or something like that, something that will heal pretty quickly. When I'm talking about a major injury, I'm talking about a broken bone, a torn ligament, disc damage in the spine. I mean, there's so many different things that we could be talking about here, and it's such a broad umbrella term, injury. Mm. But when we speak about injury, we're talking to damage to the physical body.
Yeah, and I think this is an interesting concept because I think that, you know, what defines like pain in a bad sense, like it's doing damage, and pain in a good sense, like this is growing me or repairing something.
Because
this is something we speak about a lot.
Yeah, well, we came across this study recently, and I don't want to butcher the results of the study, but it was something to do with pain and diagnosis. And I think that this is a really cool place for us to start. That that there was this study done on ballet dancers. I want to say it was in Australia.
Maybe we could find the link and put it in the...
Yeah, we could put it in the show notes if I can find it again.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they were having a lot of early retirements in ballet dancers. And what they did was they stopped sending the ballet dancers off for scans when they injured themselves. And in ballet, you know, they do all sorts of crazy stuff, and back injuries are very common. So they stopped sending them off for CT scans and stopped diagnosing them with whatever their diagnosis was, slip disc, bulging disc, lumbar spine injury, whatever it was.
Mm.
And what they noticed was that as soon as they stopped sending them off for scans and diagnosing them, they had like a 98% reduction in early retirement of the belly dancers. And that's to say that, and I think what Paige was alluding to, is that sometimes there is a mental overlay of the pain that we're experiencing. That if a belief about this injury is formed, whether that's through diagnosis or through what someone has told you or whatever it is, it can often appear much worse than it actually is.
Sure.
And so there's kind of a difference between a minor injury or a mild injury or an old injury that's healed in a way that's, you know, a little bit different. It's got scar tissue in it and that kind of stuff, and an acute injury that's recent. An acute injury is something that is painful, something that may have swollen, something that may be bruised. There's because of that swelling and fluid in the joint, there might be difficulty moving in that area of the body. And in that case, it is likely that you require some kind of medical attention or at least some rest.
Mm-hmm.
And that rest, we have a really simple and specific protocol called RICE, R-I-C-E.
It's not ours, but
it's just like in the medical establishment, that's the general recommendation, is that you rest, ice, compress, and elevate.
Mm-hmm.
And for most mild injuries, such as sprained ankles, you know, bend down to pick up your kid and you put your back out, something like that, you'll go to the doctor and they'll say to you, go and do your RICE, which means that you'll take a rest, you'll ice the area, you'll wear some kind of compression sock, and then you'll put it up.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of cases, that's all that's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, if you've never ever hurt yourself before, it can be like, oh, well, that seems too simple.
Yeah. Right?
I have to go to the doctor and I have to get a scan and I have to get the surgery.
Mm.
I think that, and even like referencing our last episode from last week, that the body has this innate capacity to heal, that your body is so, so, so intelligent and it's got healing built into it. That if you give it the time and the space and nourishment that it needs, it will repair itself. Mm. And it has an incredible ability to do that. And I'll go into a little bit of a story about my own injuries in a little bit around, yeah, how my body had healed. But I think that it's just a nice place to start that not all injuries need surgery. I feel like going into a story now just about the recent injury that I had. It was a silly situation.
Very silly.
But I was in the studio and we were on one of our teacher training evenings and we were having a little bit of a break, and so I thought I'd have a little bit of a play around, and we had some gymnastics rings hanging up in the studio. And if you practice with us, you'll notice that they're now taken down. Anyway, I got a little ahead of myself and I did a flip on the rings and I came off and I fell on the concrete and landed on my heel and I fainted. And usually when I faint, I know that I've done something pretty bad, that something's happened inside, that my body's in shock. And it's actually quite a common response for people to injure themselves and then pass out. And so I called Paige and I was like, hey, look, I've fallen over and I've hurt my ankle. I think it's okay. But yeah, just letting you know. And anyway, Paige came down, had a bit of a freak out. What was that experience like for you?
So stressful. Just, you're always doing things like that to me. Yeah, just like,
so Paige was stressed and she was, I want to say, borderline hysterical, wanted to take me to the hospital immediately.
I don't know if that was just me. I feel like you had said we should go to the hospital.
No, I said we should stay and finish the teaching.
That is not what you said to me at all.
Anyway, I think we have two different versions of this story in
our
head.
That didn't get said.
So we went to the emergency and we couldn't get into the emergency. I swear to God, I said it was okay.
I'm like 99% sure it was your idea to go to the hospital.
No, it was your idea. And I said we should stay because I want to do the chanting.
No,
and no one agreed with me.
Well, you might have said that to the students, but you did not say it to me.
Okay. So Paige was freaking out and she was certain that I'd broken my foot, that I'd done this, that I'd done that. And I said, no, it's okay. Anyway, it took me a couple of weeks. I got some crutches. I was limping around the studio. Everyone was saying, oh, what's wrong with you? What happened?
Mind you, he did not want to use the crutches at all. He was like walking on it and jumping on it. And so he wasn't actually performing rice at all.
I was sitting down. I had my leg up for the whole weekend. I was icing it every hour. I did all the things that you're supposed to do. And after a couple of weeks, it was better.
Yeah, and we got some like tests done on it and everything, some scans, and it did come back, you know, like 5 or 6 weeks later that it was like a minor tear in one of the ligaments.
Yeah, so there was a torn ligament in the talocalcaneal ligament, which is the ligament that attaches your heel bone to your foot bone.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I actually got in for the scan, I already knew that there was a torn ligament, like I could feel it in my body. I'd done everything that I needed to do. I went and got the scan, and the guy kind of just confirmed my own suspicions. And then I just went back to doing what I always do. Mm. I went back to doing my yoga practice. I went back to riding my bike. I went back to running around and climbing trees.
Yeah, and mind you, like, Aaron has a very extensive knowledge of how to rehab his own body. And so there was definitely, like, specific exercises that he was doing to re-strengthen these parts of the ligament. It wasn't like there was no professionalism in this at all. I don't know if this is a great story to be sharing.
But, I mean, the thing is that I got better.
Totally. But with, like, if you didn't have the knowledge, you would have needed some rehabilitation.
I would have needed to go and see a physio or something like that. But the moral of the story is that Paige and I had two very different experiences of my injury. Mm-hmm. That there was this kind of fear and like caution coming from Paige's side. And there was kind of this knowingness that my body has the capacity to heal from my side. And it was interesting because this time that I injured myself, I was probably in the best shape that I've been in a long, long time, maybe since I was a teenager. Mm. And also, I had been through that process of injury so many times that I knew exactly how to deal with it.
Mm.
And so maybe let's just reel off some of the injuries that I've had over my lifetime. When I was 13, I broke my elbow. I snapped the growth plate straight off of the bone. When I was 18, I tore my ACL on my left knee and had a left knee reconstruction. A year after that, I tore my ACL again. I had another ACL reconstruction. A year after that, I tore my lateral ligament, LCL, and had another knee reconstruction. A year after that, I had a cartilage removal. They call it an arthroscopy on my knee. Somewhere in between there, I also broke my right ankle and tore all the ligaments. So I had an ankle reconstruction. I fell over on my snowboard and tore my AC joint on my left shoulder, which was another one that needed surgery, but I didn't have the surgery. And then on top of that, you know, broken toes, rolled ankles.
So some would say you're pretty clumsy.
Pretty. You could say it as clumsy.
I would say extremely clumsy.
You could say experienced with injury.
Oh my goodness. Every time we're just like in the studio, Aaron's like walking around and like trips on a block every single day. Like there's a block on the floor set up next to a mat. He just like does not look at the ground. He's like this always. Up with the fairies.
Off with the fairies.
Yeah, you are. You have that vata. That's what it is, I reckon.
And so I think what is so interesting about this story is that I'm more prepared than anyone to get injured. And more than anyone, I know what that process looks like in order to heal
not more than
myself. To heal myself.
Yes, that's true.
And so I very much trust in my body's capacity to heal. Now, the reason that I tell you about all of these injuries is that none of them have had a lasting effect on my capacity to move.
Yeah, and I would think that's strongly mental because you're so stubborn, almost,
stubborn.
In a good way. Like stubborn as in like, you're never going to let somebody tell you that you can't do something.
Yeah, I don't know if it's stubborn more than like
grounded,
driven,
yeah.
Or like, I don't know what the word is. It's
kind
like
of like
right
fuster.
Of
it's like grounded in sense of self. It's just like, no, yeah.
I know what
way.
I'm capable
yeah,
of.
Yeah, totally. But I think not everyone has that. And I think that so many times when people get injured, they have no idea, no experience, no knowledge, you know, no family history of something like this. And so, you know, they have to listen to the experts. And the experts, of course, maybe are saying, you know, you may never run again. Or, you know, you hear this all the time. I got told I could never run again. I got told I could never do this again. And then they hear it so much that, like, they don't know any different.
That
they believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think for me, just that to circle back to what I was trying to say was that I'm not in any pain.
Mm-hmm.
There's no swelling in my body.
Mm-hmm.
I can ride my bike 100 kilometers on the weekend. I can still do everything that I used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Despite having all of these injuries and despite having multiple doctors telling me that I would never run again, that I would never play sport again, and so on and so forth.
I think maybe just on this side topic while we're here before we move on is something that's been really reflected to me in my studies and seems really resonant whenever we talk about stuff like this is whenever we have any injury or whenever we have any disease or illness, it's so important to not identify with it as mine.
I remember you saying that to me. I remember you saying that disease or injury takes on its own ahamkara.
Uh-huh.
And if you listen to our podcast, I think it's called like What is Mind?
Mm.
You'll know that there is a yogic concept called ahamkara.
Mm.
Aham meaning I am.
Mm-hmm.
So the ahamkara is the thought, I am. And what Paige is trying to say is that these injuries or illnesses, they take on their own ego.
Yeah.
They become
attached. They feed off that.
Yeah, they become attached to your sense of self.
Mm.
And now all of a sudden I've fallen over, I've broken my ankle. I'm no longer Aaron, I'm Aaron with the broken ankle.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time on top of that, injuries create attention. We had a guy in the studio last night and he just had a graze and I like bandaged him up because we didn't have any band-aids. Anyway, I said to him, oh, it's a talking point. And so many people came in and they said, oh, what did you do to your knee? And so I think that when you do, you fall over, you start limping, you've got this injury, all of a sudden you start to get all this attention.
Mm.
Like, oh, you know, you're that guy with that sore knee. And I still get it to this day. Mm-hmm. People will come in and be like, oh, how are your knees going?
Yeah.
The disease or the injury takes on its own personality within you. And so we kind of attach ourselves
to
it.
And when you speak to that, there's like, it's so funny because it's so hard to grasp with the mind. But when we attach, you know, when identity attaches like that, it's almost like we don't want to let that part of ourself go. Like, who would I be if I wasn't Aaron with the dodgy knee? You know, like, would I even be here or, you know, whatever it is. And what we say is to not refer to it as something that's yours or meshed with your existence, but rather so something that you're experiencing. And I see it all the time. And, you know, I've had migraines most of my life. And, you know, sometimes when I tell somebody, you know, because I can't see them or whatever, that I'm not feeling well and I've got a migraine. And, you know, mind you, it's much less these days. But I'll say something like that and they'll be like, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. I know how much you struggle with your migraines. And I'm like so triggered because I'm like, no, I don't. Like, I'm just experiencing this. Like, I'm just Paige and they're not my migraines, but it's a migraine that I'm currently experiencing.
Yeah.
And how to remove it from you, you know?
Yeah, that and it comes down to like basic mindfulness theory. Basic meditation theory that pain is transient, pleasure is transient, that migraine is transient, sore knee is transient. All of these things, they'll surface and then they'll disappear again.
Mm.
And the practice of meditation, the practice of yoga is to let things go.
Mm.
That things can surface in our awareness, we can experience them momentarily, and then we can let them go again. But the problem that so many people have is that when they get injured, when they find disease surfacing in their experience, they attach to it and they don't let it go away again.
Yeah.
That, we almost become defined by our pain because it makes us interesting.
Mm.
You know, it's, I think even for me, like being able to say that I've been, you know, in the operating theater 7 times, it's an interesting story. People are like, wow, that's so crazy. I couldn't even imagine that.
And it's interesting to think about because this is something that I spoke to with one of my dear friends and clients the other day was, you know, like for someone that I didn't really expect had had like a lot of surgeries, had been under the anesthesia 10 times. And if you're, you know, I'm sure you don't know, maybe you do, but that causes an incredible amount of vata aggravation. Like being put to sleep in that sense with these very subtle, very light, very dry drugs, it creates, yeah, this extreme aggravation of vata. And so it's definitely something that needs to be looked at and addressed if that is something that is continuously occurring for you or has in the past.
That's interesting, because I always quite liked that whole process.
Yeah, like, I know. Of course you do, because you've already...
I thought it was kind of fun.
Airhead.
And, you know, every time I went into the hospital and... let's just, for example, a couple of years ago, I dislocated my shoulder mountain boarding. And I remember going into the hospital and they gave me ketamine.
Oh, my goodness.
And like when I was younger, ketamine was like a party drug. Like people would take ketamine as a party drug. I went into the hospital and they gave me, I think it was 0.5 milligrams of ketamine per kilo.
Mm.
And it sent me, I felt like I was a photon floating through a wormhole.
Just for a dislocated shoulder.
It was literally a trip.
Wow.
And I can fully understand why that would be vata aggravating.
Yeah.
Because the drugs that they give you in the hospitals are intense.
Yeah.
It's a traumatic experience.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, even from my perspective, like I thought it was fun, obviously. but regardless, it was a traumatic experience. And I think the technology of surgery has come so far in the last 30 years. Mm. I was having a conversation with a student a couple of weeks ago, and we were exchanging knee stories. And he was telling me about his surgery, and we had very similar scars. His were probably twice the length of mine. Mm. My scars are about, if you're watching the video, about this big. But he was explaining the process of the surgery that he had, and they were putting all sorts of plates and screws and steel, and he can't bend his knee past a certain degree. Like he can't take his heel to his bum anymore.
Mm.
And he was like, well, for the technology at the time, it's a pretty good outcome.
Because it was in like the 80s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think the thing to realize, and this is maybe just a note for yoga teachers, but anyone who's interested, that if someone has told you, I went in for a joint reconstruction surgery or a joint replacement surgery or anything like that, even a surgery for a broken bone, what they're talking about, and trigger warning for anyone that doesn't like goriness, what they're talking about is like drilling into your body, cutting open with scalpels. They literally use power tools.
Mm.
I've seen videos of people using like, they look like circular saws and power drills.
Oh my God.
To drill into bones with screws.
Yeah. And I think just on this before we move on, is that like, it's just such an interesting experience because Aaron is like, yeah, one of these guys that's kind of like, I can do anything, you know, like I'm so brave and like strong and, you know, has obviously had all these injuries, which has just given him almost this, you know, great sense of confidence in his ability and stuff. But his kryptonite is the dentist. And I am like so certain that it's because, you know, he's been under anesthesia so many times and the physical trauma of like these power tools being drilled into his body, like his body remembers that. Even if his mind wasn't, you know, awake or conscious, like his body, his nervous system remembers that experience. And so then whenever he's in the dentist chair and she's, you know, the sweetest lady ever, and she's like drilling into Aaron's teeth or like even cleaning with that drill thing, Aaron just is wriggly and he's crying and he's like swearing and just he seriously can't handle it. And it's just so such an interesting reflection for me to see like that is the experience of this very physical trauma that's not even like in his memory.
Mind. Well, that was kind of the point that I was getting at, is that like as much as it, like I thought at the time that it was fun, it's quite a traumatic experience.
Oh, totally.
And that the trauma of injury physically can last for quite a long
forever,
time.
Maybe.
And that trauma can create quite an intense mental overlay, which is kind of our next point, is just that like injury can have quite significant impact on mental health.
Yeah.
That number one, and I really had this experience that up until I was 18, I'd only really injured myself once, and it was when I broke my elbow. But up until the point of about 18, I really thought I was invincible. I shit you not. Like, I thought I was just, nothing could stop me.
We came from such different worlds. I was like, I remember being young and like crying because I was so afraid of death. Yeah.
Okay, I never had that. And so after being injured for the first time, what I really had this very palpable experience of fear for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
That I was afraid of re-injuring myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially after my knee, because it was 12 months recovery.
Yeah.
And I had seen the physio 20 times.
Yeah.
And I had done numerous hours in the gym to get to a point where I could return to sport. But all of a sudden, there was this new mental block that, oh, what if I hurt myself again?
It's kind of like scar tissue, but of the mind.
Yeah,
it's
that's
like,
a good way
you know,
to put
like
it.
We've spoken about some scars before. And if you don't know what some scars are, there's these mental grooves that, you know, you can think of it like scar tissue almost. And it's just like, you know, your mind moves in such a way that it creates this groove like a river as it flows and flows and flows through the land. It creates that groove in the land to allow the water to flow. And the same thing with the mind, that, you know, once we, you know, have that experience in our minds, you know, based on memory, based on ahamkara, based on anything, then yeah, it kind of gets a little rigid and it gets a little, you know, stuck. And then, you know, you have a tendency, that's what the samskara is, you have a tendency for your mind to flow down that route of fear or worry about a certain injury.
Mm. And then you become overly cautious.
Mm.
I think on top of that, my experience after being injured was maybe in the beginning frustration.
Okay, yeah.
That I couldn't do what I wanted to do, especially for that first 12 months.
Well, what's the like five stages of grief? I'm sure it would be something similar.
Maybe. Have a look.
Is it called Bring Five it Stages?
Yeah, Five Stages of Grief. But yeah, I think for me, there was this initial just like frustration that I just couldn't get up and cook myself some lunch. I had to like, you know, call my mom and be like, Mom, I'm hungry. Can you make me some lunch and bring it up to my bedroom? That I couldn't, you know, go to social gatherings because I was like in bed with a bandage on my knee with an ice pack. And even on top of that, there was like a hopelessness at a certain point that like, will I ever get through this?
Yeah.
You know, will I ever get out of bed again? Because after a surgery like that, you're in bed for how, when I had the surgery in 2020, maybe how long was I in bed for?
Probably not that long. It wasn't a big reconstruction.
It was a couple of weeks.
It was, I reckon about a month.
Yeah. And then after that, like, but that month is just like,
it's a long time.
It's a month is a long time to lay in your bed or on your couch.
Yeah.
And like play video games and watch TV. There's not much you can do from your bed and from your couch. And yeah,
except
there's
like
a
meditate
real
and breathe.
There's a real frustration that happens in there. It's like a forced Vipassana retreat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially for someone that loves to do everything for themselves.
Yeah, an
independent
for sure.
Person, yeah.
And I'm a hyper-independent person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doesn't like to ask for help.
Yeah, and so there's this kind of like limitation in your daily tasks. I can't go to the shops by myself. I can't drive my car. I can't ride my bike. I can't work. I can't clean. I can't cook. I can't go to the toilet. I can't even get in the shower by myself without having to get someone to come and tape my leg up with a garbage bag. And so I think that, and for me personally, that led to severe anxiety and depression.
Yeah, let me share the stages of grief quickly, because I think it is. It's kind of like this grieving of a part of yourself or who you were before the injury. And so just off Google, the five stages of denial, anger, which is like frustration that you mentioned, bargaining is one, and then depression, and then acceptance.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of makes sense. Yeah, and it is. It's kind of that grieving of the person and the lifestyle that you were living before you were injured.
Yeah.
And I remember that first time I got injured. Like, I didn't know what that meant for me.
Mm.
Like, I didn't know what the process was. Mm. I had no idea. And then all of a sudden, yeah, you're in bed for a month and you don't get to see any of your friends.
I mean, if they're good friends, they would be coming to visit you.
Well, the first time. And then it kind of got old. But yeah, I think for a lot of people, it can really lead to either the depression of like, my life is different now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm longing for the past, or anxiety around the future.
Yeah.
I've had a few yoga therapy clients like this that are so anxious to do anything,
mm.
especially yoga or gym yeah. or sport.
Yeah.
Because they're worried about re-injuring themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have to go through that trauma again. And even if they go to the doctor and the doctor says, you're in the clear, everything's all good, your nervous yeah. system still remembers that.
And so how do we move past that mental block?
So this is where we need to make that distinction that you made at the start
mm.
between like an acute yeah. injury, pain from an acute injury, pain that's recent, that needs attention, and pain that's lingering and most of the time based in the mind.
Yeah, and I think also it's important to know, like, when you get injured, most of the time I would just say most of the time, what happens is you go through this period of rest, you know, maybe you take a week off, maybe it's a month, maybe it's a couple months, you know, there's a period of rest where you have to just let that part of the body, whether it's a bone or a ligament or whatever, heal. And so what happens then is then the body forms a slight weakness. You know, the muscles aren't getting used as much. And so that you know, the muscles in your arm or in your leg, they start to weaken. And so not only do you need to associate as you begin to move into rehabilitation, you know, whether the pain is pain or whether it's like weakness almost. Mm. Like there's this process that has to happen of strengthening the muscles and the ligaments, et cetera, around the injury to begin to regain it back to its natural state. And so then it's like, well, how do I know if this is pain because my muscles are weak and I'm starting to grow them and strengthen them and, you know, rip them apart to bring them back together, or if it's pain because I'm doing more damage?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things in that. A couple different points. The first one was the pain thing, mm. which I think we should maybe sit on that for a moment. That yes, it could be that like the muscles are rebuilding. I have this picture of my legs
mm.
after my first knee surgery,
yeah.
after taking that 12 months off.
Exactly.
And I've got one leg that's normal size and the other one is like a chicken leg, just a bony, muscle-less,
yeah.
fatless, skinny little leg.
Yeah.
And so, yes, there needs to be that recovery time mm-hmm. to rebuild the muscles. But two, when you are injured, your body has all of these processes. I know. I was okay. just making a little joke. To form what's called scar tissue.
Mm.
And scar tissue is a type of tissue just like muscle or fascia or skin or anything like that. But it binds in a certain gristly way where if your muscle fibers are meant to slide across one another, they're all moving in the same direction, the scar tissue starts to grow in the other direction.
Mm.
So it's kind of like a cross weaving. And you can imagine what that cross weaving does is it creates tension, it mm-hmm. creates tightness, it creates stiffness and stuckness in the joint.
Yeah, not
or
only
in the muscle.
Not only that, but like, you know, our muscle tissue and our fascia and our ligaments, it's the tissues that allow the fluids to move through the body. And so then if there's this scar tissue that's stuckness and stagnation in this part of the area, in this area of the body, sorry, then, you know, the fluids and this healing fluids that we're, you know, consuming, the nourishment of rasa, of lymph, of blood, etc., you know, there's limitation there.
Yes. And so back to the point I was trying to make was that at that stage where you're moving out of the acuteness of the injury and into recovery,
mm-hmm.
sometimes there is pain that is not causing damage.
Yeah.
And I think that is the most important distinction to make. that sometimes we need to work through pain.
And I think that it's just so intuitive. Like at the end of the day, you know, I'm not going to be able to tell you that, or you're not going to be able to tell somebody that, but only you are going to be able to tap into your own experience and understand and listen to whether that, you know, movement that you're doing is leading you, you know, towards growth and recovery and rehabilitation, or if it's leading towards more damage.
Yeah. And if that's in your experience, it could be just that simple question of,
yeah,
is this pain causing me damage?
Yeah.
Or is this pain moving me toward healing?
Yeah.
It's a powerful question to ask. Mm. There have been countless times where I've been in the gym or on my yoga mat and moving through pain, but knowing that it's the best thing I could possibly be doing for myself.
Yeah. And then there's times where you are doing something and you feel pain and you know that it wasn't a good pain.
Totally. 100%. When it's sharp and shooting and hot and burning and it's not
weird.
Good.
Yeah.
On top of that, there is a mechanism in your body, especially in the joints, if you injure a ligament or a joint complex in any way, that in order to protect the joint, it will fill it with fluid. We call it swelling. And that sometimes, especially if you are prone to inflammation, that your inflammatory markers are high, usually that's through eating a lot of processed sugar and processed foods and junky foods, that as you start to recover and you begin moving again, the joint is still trying to protect itself. The inflammation is triggered and then you'll get swelling. And, you know, for me personally, there were, especially with my ankle, there were years where I would get up and I would walk for 5 minutes and then I would just have to sit down because I had this achy, throbby, swollen feeling in my ankle. That the pain of that inflammation and swelling was making it difficult for me to do any movement that would move me toward healing.
And that pain being triggered by diet and lifestyle more
It was a really, really, like, real experience for me. The first couple of times I got injured, I was 18, so I just got out of high school. You know, we were like schoolies. I was a tradie. So, you know, I just continued on with my regular lifestyle. I was drinking on the weekends. Mm-hmm. I'd pop 6 painkillers and have a 6-pack of beers.
Oh, my goodness.
I was still doing all those things. And my healing diet, my recovery diet was like a liter of Coke a day and some deep fried chips and chicken strips and like meat and dairy and all of these things that we know are inflammatory for the body. And I know now that eating that diet at that period of my life was contributing so much to the inflammation in my body that was limiting my body's capacity to heal. I figured out a couple of years later that there was such a big correlation between diet and lifestyle and recovery. And I started this process of figuring all that out. I started eating healthy and drinking tea instead of soft drink and you know, eating more or less the diet that I eat now. But what I noticed was that having surgery and post-surgery eating a diet of processed and deep-fried and sugary foods plus soft drinks compared to having a surgery and post-surgery eating a diet of turmeric tonics and, you know, whole foods and vegetables and legumes, I recovered so much quicker.
Yeah.
And the swelling didn't stay around after a month or so. It just went away and it never came back.
Interesting.
And so
that just adds a whole nother layer to recovery.
Totally. And on top of that, you know, that healthy, clean diet is going to clear up your mental space. It's going to allow you to think more clearly and feel better emotionally. It's going to allow you to regulate your hormones better. So the whole experience of injury gets a lot easier when we look after ourselves.
Totally.
And, you know, back on that swasta thing, that you're giving your body the appropriate conditions to heal. Cool. Yeah.
And that's your responsibility.
Yeah, totally, totally.
It's not your mom or whoever, your partner. It's fully your responsibility.
Yeah.
I mean, and they support you, but you have to be willing to,
make that journey. Yeah. You totally have to be willing to heal. And a lot of the time, from the yogic perspective, from the Dharma perspective, like, you have that experience, and maybe we're getting a little woo-woo now, but you have that experience because you've been out of alignment in, mm-hmm. in some way. And for me, at that period of my life, I was so far out of alignment mm-hmm. that the universe just came and gave me a big kick in the balls.
A couple of kick in the balls.
Multiple kicks in the balls.
All right, so how does it relate to yoga?
Yeah, okay. So I think, since I'm speaking so much from my personal experience, it was yoga that initiated that process for me, that really started to make me think, like, is my diet and lifestyle affecting my capacity to heal? And also, I think what yoga gave me was that self-empowerment, that knowledge that I have the capacity to heal. And especially me with joint injuries, it gave me a methodology to look after my joints. And it really led me on the path that I am on now. Like, ever since I did my first 200-hour training, I knew I wanted to be a yoga therapist. I knew that I wanted to use yoga to help people to heal. And it was so funny when I signed up as a teacher training provider with Yoga Alliance, and there's this big, it's funny, it's this big warning that says, like, you cannot use the word healing in any marketing context in relation to yoga classes, teacher trainings, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
That, as much as we all know how healing yoga is, there is so much more to using yoga to heal than a 200-hour program.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
And that's why yoga therapy exists.
Yeah, and not only that, but then it gets misconstrued that, you know, you come to see a yoga teacher to get healed, but really it's you that has
it's
to do
you
the
doing
healing.
Your own healing. And that's the whole premise of yoga therapy is that we empower people to take their healing into their own hands. We don't do any of the healing.
Yeah.
It's a hands-off approach from me.
Yeah.
It's all up to you.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to do the work, then I can't help you.
Yeah, totally. No one can help you.
No one's going to help you.
Not even a Reiki healer.
No? Reiki healing hands won't heal you?
Not if you're not willing.
Oh, nothing against Reiki. If you do Reiki, we love you.
We love Reiki. But it was just the point was that if you're not willing to make that journey of healing, you could go to as many, what's
different
the word?
Different therapists as you like.
Yeah, and nothing's going to change.
Yeah. And so for me, that was almost always my path. I knew I wanted to be a yoga therapist, and I knew that I wanted to understand how yoga heals. And so I think that there's so much in that for so many people, there is such a rich wealth and abundance of information and methodologies and ideologies within the yoga tradition that will and can allow you to find a new perspective on your injury. And through asana practice, strengthen your body and support your joints and learn how to hold yourself in a way that will, you know, amplify that healing process and give your body the strength that it needs to support itself. Realign any asymmetries in the body because of a joint complex that's been malfunctioning for a period of time. There's so much in that. And then after a couple of years, I realized that people can get injured doing yoga. And it was one of those, like, bom, bom, bom moments that it's actually really common.
Totally.
People just getting in there and, we call them yoga cowboys, just getting in there and swinging some limbs around and
We were having this conversation this morning with a few students, and Aaron was definitely a yoga cowboy back in the day and has caused some injury not only to himself but to other people.
Maybe I could tell that story because it was quite hysterical. One time I was in a yoga class. It was quite busy. And I, as Paige said, was a yoga cowboy. It was a vinyasa class. I was getting into it. I was maybe a month in, super confident. You know, uttanasana, jump back, chaturanga, upward facing dog, downward facing dog, three-legged dog. And I swung my leg back and kicked this woman in the face, and she had to go to hospital. Mm. Loved that for her.
Yeah. And she was okay.
She was okay. There was no broken eye socket. They thought it was a broken eye socket, but it wasn't. And everything
that
was okay.
That definitely does not happen at Om Som. There are no yoga cowboys allowed at Om Som. No.
And also, that's not a common yoga injury. So let's talk about common yoga injuries, things that we see in yoga all the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of what we see in yoga is overstretching of ligaments.
Maybe before we like break this down quickly, you can kind of like view it in two umbrellas, that there could be yoga injuries caused by student.
Yeah.
And there could be yoga injuries caused by teacher.
Yeah, cool. All right, that's interesting. Okay. So yeah, negligence on both parts. Paige's just going to go and open our washing machine door because it's beeping at us. I don't know why you turned the washing machine on whilst we were recording the podcast. You're going to top us up, are you? Be careful not to bang things on the bench too much. Excuse our interlude. Maybe you can pour yourself a cup of tea as well. Okay, so we were talking about
negligence
on both parts. Negligence on the count of the students and negligence on the count of the teacher. There's a lot of
complexity
within this.
Let's simplify.
So on the
students, let's start with the students' terms first.
I think it comes down to ego, that so many, and not on a fault of their own, but so many people come into yoga with this Instagram mindset that I've seen all of these people on Instagram doing yoga, and I was using quotation marks there, and they're doing handstands, and they're doing crow pose, and they're doing...
One of our teachers says, this is posing, not posture. anyway.
And so they come into yoga and they want all of those things. Mm-hmm. They want to do the handstands. They want to do the headstand. They want to do the crow pose. They want to do all of this without building a solid foundation. And I'll talk about what that solid foundation is in a moment. Mm. But they get a little bit excited. And then we've had it happen on our teacher trainings a couple of times. Someone will try to get into a pose and then they'll fall out of it because they don't have the strength. And then something gets hurt. And they say, ouch. Ouch, I've got an ouchie. Mm-hmm. That's negligence on the part of the student, and that's inherent in any movement activity.
Oh, totally. We see it so much at the gym as well.
Like yeah, people gyms. Lifting too much in the gym. Mm-hmm.
Improper form.
Doesn't matter what sport you do, there's always dangers in movement. And it's the same with walking down the street.
Yeah.
You know, there could be a gutter that you don't see and you trip over. Yeah, so totally. Some of these things are just freak accidents. Mm-hmm. And so we just need to be a little bit considerate and try to understand as best we can what our capacity is as a student of yoga, as a practitioner of yoga.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to add on to this, other than ego, is like an incredible lack of body awareness.
Love that.
Yeah. Just so many people come into the movement industry with, you know, and me, I was this person, like not somebody that's connected with my body for a lot of my life. Just like really lacked that body awareness, really lack what is my left foot? What is my right hand? You know, like, and we see people like this all the time in class, and it's nothing to be embarrassed about because that's the truth of our society. Is there's very much like emphasis on the mind and intelligence and academia, and a less so emphasis on, you know, physical activity.
Coordination.
Yeah, coordination. Balance, you know, all these things that you used to play on Wii Fitness if you had that.
Yeah, or the playground if you're old enough to have a playground in your life. And so we could consider body awareness simply the awareness of your body in movement. And it really comes down to like mapping out physical space, just like we would map out our physical, our outer space, like you plan a house, you draw a map of Australia. I understand where Berwick is in relation to Melbourne city. We can have that same experience internally.
Yeah.
I understand where my right wrist is in relation to my right shoulder.
Yeah.
And this is the intricacy of yoga practice. Everything that we do in asana practice is designed to create that mental map of our inner experience within our physical body.
Yeah, and just by practice and by increase of consciousness and awareness in every single thing that we're doing.
Yeah. And so, yeah, what we see is that people come into yoga practice and they come into quite an advanced class with little to no body awareness. And so they will hold themselves in positions that are a little unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
And by unsafe, I mean not energy efficient.
Yeah.
Not structurally...
sound.
Sound. Yeah, just that it could be a little more stable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not anyone's fault, but... societies.
Yeah, really. And you know, you've listened to a few of our podcasts in the past, you'll know that yoga is traditionally taught one-on-one, and somehow in the consumerist capitalist world we've, you know, jam-packed all these people into a single yoga class, so for whatever reason. And that's just the essence of it, is that we have to learn as teachers to be able to teach to a room, to be able to make sure everybody's as safe as possible, and to make sure you're teaching classes that are suitable and designed specifically for who you've got in front of you.
Yeah. I think on top of that, just that we all get brought up in a school system that makes us sit in a desk for 8 hours. How long does school go for? 8 hours?
Six hours.
However long a day, 6 hours, and then you've got your homework. You go home, sit and do your homework. Then they give you this physical education class where you get to leave your desk for 45 minutes
a week,
twice a week, and go and what, kick a soccer ball around,
volleyball, beep test,
do the beep test, do your vertical jump test. And I think for me, like, I was never a sports kid. It's like I could not think of anything worse than going to the phys ed class at a high school in Australia. Maybe your country is different. But I was so, like, I was just so bored every time we did phys ed. And I was a super athletic kid.
You like the extreme sports.
Yeah. But it was just so boring for me. And there was no education around this is why we're doing this, or this is why it's good for you, or anything like that. It was just come and let's kick some balls around, kiddos. And so I think because of that, we're all very intellectual. We're all very cerebral. That we're thinking, we spend a lot of time in our minds, not a lot of time in our bodies. We come into yoga, which requires you to inhibit your body, and a lot of us don't know how to do that, and then that can cause injuries. It's not always the case. We have hundreds of students that come through our doors every single day that don't get injured.
So yeah. Oh, yes.
By no means is that a common thing, but it's sometimes common. Negligence on the part of the teacher. There could be a couple of angles that we could approach this. Number one being that you're teaching a class that's just way too hard for the people in front of you. I think that in the same way that students get excited when they start practicing yoga, teachers get excited when they start teaching yoga. And in the beginning, for some teachers, it can become a little bit performative, that you've written this fancy, dancy sequence that's got all of these, you know, cool poses in it and funky transitions, and you can do it really well, and you kind of want to show off a little bit, and then you get, you know, 80-year-old Jenny in your class, and you're like, all right, we're going to do the Ashtanga Primary series, and she's like, oh, I don't know what that is. This is my first yoga class. And you just put Jenny through her paces, and Jenny gets hurt. That was an analogy. That's not a real thing that happened. It was an analogy. And so that could be one form of negligence on the teacher's side, is that they're just teaching a class that's too intense for the students in front of them. It's always something we drill into our YTTs is that you teach to what's in front of you.
Yeah. And if that means you get 80-year-old Jenny or a beautiful pregnant woman walk into your class, you have to adapt. You have to change. You have to make it accessible for anybody that's in front of you.
And on top of that, you have to adapt even if another student is likely to whinge at you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's a very common experience.
And I mean, like, on top of that, like, you're never going to be able to please everyone, and you're never going to be able to adapt to practice to everyone in a public group class. It's not possible. But you just need to make sure you're offering something that's safe for everyone.
Mm. Yeah. And so it's so common that we have students that come in that say, oh, I really like a strong, sweaty practice. I really want to do this pose. And it's like you've got this person that's like pretty fit and like trying these challenging asanas, and then you've got 80-year-old Jenny next to her. And it's like, well, who am I gonna please here? Mm. Am I gonna please young Jimmy at 19 years old who wants to do headstand, or am I gonna, you know, make sure that 80-year-old Jenny is safe and has an appropriate practice for her? And I think as teachers, we need to make that decision. And I would highly suggest looking after Jenny than entertaining Jimmy's ego. The second way...
Because Jimmy will still benefit from the practice no matter what.
Totally, yeah. Totally. There'll still be benefit on both ends. We just want to rein it back in the way. And then there's always these layers that we can add to practices where options, you have options and you tell people this option is not for you today.
Yeah.
Even if you have to be a bit strict about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so on top of that, another form of negligence on the part of the teacher is physical assisting. I personally have had a teacher dislocate a joint assisting me by putting too much weight into an assist. Closed joint, too much pressure, and then the joint pops. I've heard so many stories of this. You know, teachers coming up in Uttanasana or Paschimottanasana and sitting on your back, and you hear a hamstring tendon snap. It happens, and it's not so common it's definitely not common in our space.
Yeah.
It's not so common in the modern streams of yoga, but in the past, and especially in some of these lineages that are very hands-on, it's perpetuated by the teachers. It's perpetuated by the gurus. I think there's this story, I don't want to butcher it too much, but there's a story about Bikram or Iyengar, one of those guys, and someone came in with frozen shoulder. And if you don't know what frozen shoulder is, it's basically you can't lift your hand up above shoulder height. And this teacher came along and just yanked this shoulder, and this student let out this dirty big scream. And then the teacher was like, see, fixed, hands over head now. And it was just like, fixed or trauma? You tell me. And anyway, in that tradition, the story is told in this way that like that assist saved the person's life. Like this teacher, by yanking this person's arm, miraculously cured their frozen shoulder. And then it's kind of brushed off and we move on with the conversation. And so I think in a lot of these traditions, it's perpetuated that we can give very heavy hands-on assists to our students. I've seen the other side of the coin, where those very heavy hands-on assists are taken to the extreme and actually cause injury. So I tend to take a little more of a hands-off approach. Sometimes it can be helpful, and by all means, we teach hands-on assists in our trainings. I sometimes will give a hands-on assist to students in class. It's always very intentional. It's always very supported and it's always done in a way that supports the body and doesn't put that body into any kind of a vulnerable place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's negligence on the part of the teacher. And so I think when we get injured in yoga, when we hear stories of people getting injured in yoga, when physios hear stories about people getting injured in yoga, this same mindset comes in. Oh, well, what if yoga's bad for me?
Mm.
What if yoga could hurt me? And it's like, well, if that was the mindset you were going to take, what if yoga could, why do you drive a car? You could have a car crash any day now.
Mm.
You know, why do you get in the car? The car could hurt you.
Mm.
You know, why do you walk down the street? The street could hurt you.
Mm.
Everything and anything has the potential to hurt you. But when we bring awareness to our practice, when we bring awareness to our teaching, we can just make sure that we're being that little bit safer.
Mm. Yeah, beautiful.
Cool. So there's kind of one more point that I wanted to touch on before the end of this podcast. I know we're probably getting a little bit over time to what we usually do, but I think that's okay. Rogan does like 4-hour podcasts. And that's the piece around hypermobility.
Yeah, this is the most important piece, I would say.
That mobility is, basis of mobility is range of motion. That mobility is defined by how far I can move a joint through its intended range of motion. And so a lack of mobility would mean someone is quite stiff and inflexible. Mm. Someone who's a little bit tighter. And hypermobility is a term that we use for someone who is incredibly flexible to the point of instability.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a medical condition. It's a hereditary condition in some people. And in other people, it's just that they've done too much stretching.
Mm-hmm. And so it's super common in young people that have done a lot of dancing or calisthenics or gymnastics. When they're quite young, you know, your body's definitely more palpable and changeable. And then you do all these certain movements and these certain postures, and then you increase your flexibility. And then as you get older, that flexibility remains.
And it's also very common in yogis
who've
been practicing yoga in a specific way for a very long period of time.
Yep.
That stretching, and if that's their intention to stretch, causes eventually instability.
Mm-hmm.
Me specifically, hypermobility runs in my family. It's a hereditary condition that there is less collagen fibers in my ligaments, which means that I'm very, very bendy at the joints.
Mm-hmm. And it's probably why you're most prone to snapping ligaments and tendons rather than breaking bones.
Totally. And I wasn't aware of this for a very, very long time until I met a very influential physio quite a few years ago now. And she said to me, "You're very bendy." And I said, "No, I can't touch my toes. I'm not flexible." And she said, "No, your joints are very, very loose.
Mm.
That your ligaments have a laxity to them and they're a little bit sloppy.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter if your muscles are tight, your joints are loose."
Mm.
And that those people who have that hypermobility in the first place, it's a lot easier for us to get more flexible because we can get tight, but we can get loose much easier.
Mm.
In yoga language, we call them stiffies and floppies. A floppy is someone who's hypermobile.
Aaron's made this concept up. We don't.
And a stiffy is someone who's not hypermobile. But that hypermobility issue is solved in the yoga tradition by the use of bandha.
Mm.
Bandha is twofold. First, there's the subtle bandhas called Treta Bandha, which are actually a mudra described in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, Mula Bandha, Udhyana Bandha, and Jalandhara Bandha, which have an energetic application. Bandha means to bind, to lock. It's the same word as bandage.
Mm.
That's funny, because when you get injured, the first thing they want to do is bandage your joint to stiffen it up.
Yeah.
And so Bandha means to lock, to bind, to bandage, to compress something. And traditionally, there's this Treta Bandha, which is an energetic application. And it's the pelvic floor and the diaphragm and the top of the rib cage.
But that's not what we're talking about.
That's not the Bandha that I'm talking about in this context. What I am talking about is the concept of Bandha, which means the co-activation of opposing muscle groups around the joint complex. Each of your joints has the capacity to flex and it has the capacity to extend. If I flex my elbow, I'm bringing my hand towards my shoulder. If I extend my elbow, I'm taking my hand away from my shoulder. The muscle that flexes my elbow, therefore taking my hand toward my shoulder, is called my bicep. The muscle that extends my elbow and takes my hand away from my shoulder is called my triceps. These two muscles have opposing purposes. One is flexion, one is extension. Bandha in the elbow joint is to simultaneously contract those two muscle groups. So as I'm trying to bend my elbow, I try to straighten my elbow. This is what we call Bandha. And we can perform this joint Bandha in every joint in our body. There is a Bandha for your feet. It's called Pada Bandha. There's a Bandha for your hands. It's called Hasta Bandha. There's Bandha in your knees, in your hips, in your spine, in your neck, in your shoulders, your elbows. Every single joint can be protected through the use of Bandha.
Mm.
So, ideally, all beginners in yoga are being taught this concept of Bandha. Why? Because it protects those hypermobile people from overstretching the ligaments in the joints. It gives the joints this opportunity to move from this separated position that creates looseness and potentially danger by stretching the ligaments out and putting strain on the tendons. It takes them back into a closed position, a safe position that takes the pressure off of the ligaments and the tendons and the joint capsules.
Mm.
It is, it's life-changing knowledge. For me anyway, it was one of those things where I was like, holy shit, this is a game changer.
Mm.
It creates stability in the body.
Mm.
And so for those hypermobile people, Bandha is the most important thing. That when you are moving into an asana, even if it's an asana that looks like it's a stretch, you're moving there actively.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just flopping into a stretch to try and, you know, yank on your hamstrings or stretch your back out or stretch your hips out. You're trying to move there actively, which is to say that you use the activation of your muscles to get there.
Mm-hmm. Mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing.
And I think the only exception to that is yin yoga. And we do that in a very passive and stretchy way. But the idea is that we stay supported. And especially for the hypermobile people, there's, you know, a great use of props to make sure that we don't go that bit too far. And we allow ourselves to stay into a sustainable and accessible range.
Yeah. And so yin yoga, as Peter said, yeah, it's the exception. And it needs to be treated accordingly. And when we teach yoga, we teach it a little bit different to perhaps how other people teach yin yoga. But what we add in is this very slow way of moving.
Mm.
That if you're moving into a shape or out of a shape, you do so in the slowest way that you possibly can. Mm. It's almost like you're not moving at all. And in that way, you get the opportunity to feel the joints and feel the ligaments as you're moving out of this passive stretching position,
mm-hmm.
and to give them the space to not tear or become injured in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the final point that I wanted to make was that for hypermobile people, the first and most important thing that we need to do is build strength.
Mm-hmm.
To build strength in the musculature that surrounds the joints, because if that strength isn't there, and it's quite common, we see many people come in and they're very flexible and they've never done yoga before, that those people need the strength to support the joints. But what happens is that those hypermobile people who are already at risk of injury come into a yoga class and the teacher says to them, wow, you are so good at this. And it feeds the mind. It's like, oh, I'm good at this. I'm going to keep doing yoga. I'm going to keep going into these very deep poses and putting my joints in these compromised positions day in and day out because the teacher tells me I'm good at it. And so they continue. Eventually, there's some damage in a ligament or a joint. The opposite happens to the people who are stiffies, that they go to yoga and it's like, oh, I can't touch my toes. Oh, I can't even get my leg into half pigeon. Mm. Like, how will I ever get good at this? And so they go back to what they're good at, which is lifting heavy weights, going to the gym, CrossFit, something like that. And really the opposite needs to happen, that the people who are super flexible need to work on strengthening. And that doesn't mean the exclusion of a strong yoga practice, but they need to focus on more strength building in their yoga practice. And the people who are stiff and are good at lifting weights, they need to focus a little more on the stretching side of things. We can get both out of yoga practice. We just need to be very specific. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not sure which side of that fence you fall on, ask your teacher. Mm. And hopefully they can tell you. There's some pretty simple diagnostic tests that we can do to check your joint flexibility and determine what the best practice pathway would be for you. And on top of that, if you are experiencing any injuries, pain, issues in your yoga practice, hypermobility, anything like that, anything that we've spoken about on this podcast, I would be happy to have a yoga therapy session with you and work out a practice plan for you specifically to help you meet your practice goals. And you can find all of the information for yoga therapy on our website, www.omsom.yoga, and you should be able to click through to the yoga therapy section there. Cool. Anything you want to add to this conversation before we wrap this up?
I think this has been a good topic and something that's so vast we haven't touched on half of our points that we had, you know, written up. Knowing that, this is a very, very vast topic, and if it's something you want to chat more to us about, then please reach out. If it's something you want to chat to more about your yoga teacher with, then please reach out to them and know that they should be capable of answering any questions you have around this. And, you know, just reflecting, like Aaron mentioned at the start, this is no way in any form medical advice or anything like that. And if there's any, you know, hypermobility or injury or disease within your experience, to definitely seek out professional medical advice.
Cool. All right. Hari Om.
Hari Om.